You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, the Utes lay the smackdown on the Arizona State Sun Devils, and we're joined by BT from the Dog Pod to kind of help break down this Washington Husky team, give us his insight of it. I'm Cameron, and we got Ryan.
What's up, Ute Nation?
And Scott.
What's up, boys? I'm still hoarse from the game on Saturday.
I was going to say, Ryan or Scott, you sound a little under the weather.
Just a tad. It's a good thing we're keeping a safe distance away from each other. Protocols.
Maybe you caught it from the ASU team. They seemed a little bit under the weather on Saturday, too.
I think if I was going to catch anything from ASU, it would not be COVID, if you know what I mean.
Utah gets the big win, 55-3. Who saw that coming?
Oh, I think that's the score I picked last week.
Yeah. I picked Utah by 14. I thought that was like going out on a limb.
That was the Utah team I think we all expected to see this year. But with a healthy Rising, with a healthy Keithy, with, you know, all of our starters still on the field. But it was great to see nonetheless. I don't think anybody saw that coming, but I think it sent a very clear message of how that team responded from that bad loss. They were not happy. They came out with something to prove from the get-go, and you could see it from both offensively, defensively. Just kind of seemed like a refocused team.
Can I just say I love the up-tempo they started with the game?
Yeah, it was good.
That was nice.
It was a game late, but yes, it was nice to see.
Well, I know Barnes talked about, you know, they saw when they went up-tempo against Oregon, you know, right before halftime, and they were able to march down the field and ended up having to kick a field goal because of time. They really watched that and saw what the defense was doing and thought, hey, we got to start doing this more. So their opening drive, 8 plays, 72 yards. But really, I love how in the game they could pull that tempo back. They could kind of mix it in when they need to, kind of dial it back. It's a big weapon. And, you know, I know maybe Ludwig has taken some lumps and some hits from the fan base and maybe from the Oregon Ducks fan base over the years. But I got to give him credit.
Hey, all the Lede.
With all the injuries, he is, you know, trying to get this team in positions to be successful. So you got to give him credit for that.
You know, Kyle mentioned today that after that Oregon game, both Morgan and Ludwig kind of hit reset on their approach and some of the things that they were doing. And I mean, obviously, ASU, they're a two-win football team, so you can't take too much from this, but they have been playing teams pretty close. I mean, they had Oregon on the ropes, or excuse me, Washington on the ropes. You know, they've been playing better as of late. So it's still a step in the right direction. But now when you're going up against an elite team in Washington, we're going to see if maybe those resets, those different approaches that both sides of the ball took, if it can stick. Defensively, I think it can. You know, I don't think you're going to see, you know, another real bad performance from the defense. It's my question is whether or not the offense can continue to be productive against good teams.
And I think that's kind of the million-dollar question with this team is, can their offense stay consistent? Because it kind of seems like it's, you never know what type of Utah offense you're going to get depending on the day.
It appeared during the game, and then I think Whittingham confirmed it afterwards, that it looks like they had expanded what the plays they were able to run with Barnes at quarterback. So it just, it wasn't the same basic offense that we'd seen recently, which is nice. I mean, he's gotten a little more experience, and maybe some of that had to do with that reset that Scott was talking about. But, you know, if the playbook's a little bit more available to him and to the offense, I mean, that's great, because what we saw earlier just wasn't cutting it.
Yeah, so my question is, if JJ can't go, you now have very limited weapons. You know, we don't know if we're going to have Vaki, you know, playing anything offensively at the running back position. But if JJ can't go, you're going to need Vaki. I don't know that that we have the horses at running back without JJ or Vaki to really be productive and give enough through the run game to help and offset Barnes. So I think, man, JJ and Vaki's health is pivotal for, I think, for Utah to have a chance in this game.
Well, and we kind of saw Utah had that situation against Oregon State. Jaquan Jackson didn't play. And granted that Nate Johnson was the starting quarterback in that game, but you were relying on Jalen Glover to really be the guy in Oregon State. I don't know if he's ready to make that step. And it's kind of been a little disappointing.
He's been disappointing from the, at least from the aspect that we, or the expectations that we had of him coming into the season. But he did look good this week. He got some opportunities after Jackson went out after he kind of re-injured his ankle. But again, you have to take that with a grain of salt, because it's an ASU defense that was not playing well, and we're going to be playing a completely different defense this coming weekend.
Yeah, but I mean, Washington, they score a ton of points, but they kind of give up a ton of points too. They're not the Washington defense under Peterson. They're definitely just not the same. So there is opportunities for Utah to go out and put some points up on the board. Kai Whittingham says today in the press conference, you know, we're going to have to score a lot of points to beat these guys. And so with what they're able to do, with what Washington's able to do offensively, they're going to put points on. So can Utah match that, or can Utah, I mean, can Utah put 30 plus points on the road at UW? I'm a little skeptical.
No, I mean, I definitely agree. And that's why I said, like, you never know what kind of offensive output you're going to get with this team. Are you going to get the team that showed up against USC? And yes, USC is not that great defensively, and their defensive coordinator was fired this week. But that was still a different offense than we saw against Oregon, and a different offense that we saw against Arizona State. And I think that's what worries me going into Washington, is you just do not know what this offense is going to look like. What's it going to do? And Scott, you bring up Jackson, if he's not able to go. You know, one thing I did like in this ASU game is your boy, Dejon Stanley, he got a little run.
Yeah, buddy.
Him in the backfield.
Dejon.
I like that. And if Vaki is dinged up and can't play both ways, I think Stanley's a great option to try to help carry some of that workload with running the ball.
Well, and I think Utah's going to have to get pretty creative this week. I would not be surprised to see Nate Johnson have a big part of the game plan. Whether that's Wildcat, whether that's him playing the running back position. I think Whittingham, well, Ludwig's especially, is just going to have to get creative on new wrinkles, something that maybe Washington's not expecting, they haven't seen, that can create some big chunk plays, some scoring opportunities, because, I mean, points are going to be at a premium in this game. And so it's going to be important. But Nate Johnson, with that speed, Dejan Stanley, his speed, you've got to see what you can do. I don't think either one of those guys can take the full load by any means. But with their speed, maybe getting around the edges, sparking some things, I think we see something like that. I think we're going to have to.
I mean, I agree with all that, but I think you've got to take some shots down the field too and utilize Vele and McLean. I mean, that catch McLean had the end zone was unbelievable. And Vele is coming on the last couple of weeks. So, you know, stretch the field, give those guys some opportunities, and that'll also help open up the run game if you can throw that ball down the field.
Yeah, I mean, credit to Vele, man. He has come on strong. And until a team takes him away, you just got to keep feeding him the ball. You got to give him 10 targets a game because he's getting open. And he's kind of one of the only, at least in that ASU game, we really only had three pass catchers out in routes almost a majority of the time. And from the wide receiver position, it was primarily Money Parks and Vele. So it definitely feels like Ludwig, whether this is due to production, whether it's due to injuries, he's definitely kind of shortened the rotation at wide receiver. He's really sticking with Vele, keeping Vele on the field, keeping Money Parks on the field, and kind of working it from there. But yeah, keep feeding Vele the ball until somebody proves they can stop him.
All right, let's talk about the pig farmer, Bryson Barnes, 19 of 28, 161 yards, 4 touchdown passes, and 0 interceptions. That's the big, especially coming off of an Oregon game where he throws 2 interceptions. Way to bounce back from Barnes. And Whittingham talked about, and the team talked about, not letting Oregon beat them twice. I think that was a big key in this game was Barnes protecting that ball, keeping those drives alive. I do want to call out, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. So he has the 4 touchdown passes. Utah didn't throw very much in the third quarter. There was controversy on Twitter by ASU fans and by a local reporter here that Utah ran up the score. Where are you guys on this?
Wait a second. Who was the local reporter?
Josh Newman.
Oh, that's right. I did see that. Oh, yeah. That was ridiculous.
You know, I don't know. It was fourth down. You're not going to kneel it because then you just give them the ball. Not that it matters one way or the other, but you're running your second, third string guys. I mean, the running backs, your fourth string running back, they've run the same play the last 5 or 6 times. If ASU can't stop it, so be it. You're not running up the scores. I don't think they've passed the ball since halfway through the third quarter.
Well, what do you want them to do? Take a knee?
Yeah.
With six, 7 minutes left in the fourth, you just want them to take knees?
No, I don't have a problem with it. I did not look at it as running up the score. Even Dillingham made a comment about it after the game and basically said he didn't have an issue with it, and it's his team's job to stop them from scoring, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, he even said if Utah wanted to throw at the end of the game, he didn't have a problem with it because he just figured they were trying to work things out with what was their second or their backup quarterback right now. So it's interesting that he had those comments. Scott, where are you on this?
You know what, boys? We live in a soft world where everybody is just looking to be offended by everything. And, hey, if a fourth stringer offends you by running it down your throat on a dive play, that's on you. So, no, there's nothing wrong with it. Newman and everybody else can go deal with it, boys. I mean, there was nothing out of line in that regard. ASU played terrible. Utah played really well. It is what it is. I mean, it's sports. You deal with it. Maybe it'll light a fire under ASU if they really took it personally, but you know.
We'll see if they took it personally, because we'll see him again next year. New conference, same opponent.
Yay to the Big 12. Woo!
Let's talk about Kenny Dillingham real quick. Leading up to this game, he had a lot of great things to say about Kyle Whittingham and about Utah and the culture and the type of program Utah is and how he wants to mirror that and build that same thing down at Arizona State. As a Utah fan, you know, I appreciate that. It's always nice to get recognition for the program and for Kyle. But fellas, if I'm an ASU fan, I would be like, shut up. Like, we're not Utah. Like, don't, if that's what you want to do, go coach at Utah. Like, build your own culture, build your own program down here at ASU. Maybe I'm up in the night, but I think I'd be bugged.
I mean, from a Utah's perspective, it's great. Jed Fish down in Arizona, when he took over, he made similar comments, how he wanted to build a program, similar to what Kyle's done. You have him doing it. Heck, now you have Kalani Sitake basically hiring people that can try and duplicate what Utah's doing. It's a compliment, because Utah's built something that people have taken notice of and they want. And so from that perspective, it's awesome. It's well-deserved for Kyle and what he's built here. From an ASU perspective, I don't know. I don't know that I would be offended. I mean, it's true. You look at Utah, they're the new guys on the block and they won back-to-back Pac-12 titles. Does ASU not want that?
No, but okay, what if Kyle came out today and said, I want to build what Washington has. I want to build what USC has. I want to build what UCLA has. I'd be like, why? That's not us.
I think that's a little bit different, because, I mean, Dillingham's, he's young and just kind of starting to come up in the coaching ranks. And yes, he's already a head coach, but, I mean, Whittingham being one of the longest, if not longest, tenured head coaches in the nation, has built a reputation and a program that I think a lot of people would like to emulate. And Whittingham, in his state of his career right now, there's no way he's going to say, I want to build a program like so-and-so or like so-and-so. But these younger guys that recognize what Whittingham has built, I think that's a compliment to the program, and I don't think that's anything to shy away from if you want to build something that's been successful.
I mean, look what ASU fans have dealt with since we've been in the conference. They've had numerous coaches. They had Todd Graham, and he had a couple of years of success. Other than that, he was awful. He stole signs. He had that Britney Spears microphone that was embarrassing by itself. then they bring in, who was it?
Herm.
Yeah, they bring in Herm. And, they restructure everything where he's like the CEO and blah, blah, blah. And then, they kind of started to have success and it fell apart so quickly. Scandal set the program back. I think from an ASU fan base perspective, they look at that and go, yeah, Utah's good year in and year out. Like, we want that. Like, we're tired of this nonsense. We're tired because ASU recruits itself. It's, 18-year-old dudes kind of are interested in going to ASU because there's a lot of beautiful co-eds down there. And it's great weather. It's a great location.
And they have bikini parties for their recruits.
Yes, amongst other things. And so if you can win there, you're going to be able to recruit at a very high level. They should be able to do that. And if you got a coach in there that could win consistently, and Dillingham's from there, so he may stay even with success. I think from an ASU perspective, you're all in on it. Yeah, give me Kyle. Let's go.
You left out the early years of us in the Pac-12 with Erickson, who had Osweiler as the quarterback, who pretty much destroyed us every time we saw him.
That is true. That is true. I forgot our boy Dennis Erickson before he came to the correct side of things and started bringing the boys from Florida up here.
But you're right. It's been in the 12 years they've had what, four head coaches. So, I can see why a young coach would want to build something like Whittingham, and honestly, yeah, you don't want to look at your, a rival or a conference foe as someone to emulate necessarily. But if you want a winning program, I would do it.
I mean, I see your guys' point, and I think it's valid. And again, like, as a Utah fan, like, I think it's cool that someone outside of the footprint of Utah is publicly acknowledging what Kyle has built. I guess where I'm taking it is, like, just think when McBride got hired. When what if McBride came on and said, I want to build a program like Lavelle. I that's what I want. I want us to be.
I think we would have taken it at that time. T-Down
South 2.0. No, I just, from a fan base, I'm like, do your own thing. If you want to be Utah, then go coach at Utah.
Yeah, but you know what, Cam? I mean, sports is the biggest copycat deal. You know, if one team is successful doing something within a few years, everybody's doing it. And whether it's coaching, whether it's scheme, it doesn't matter. It's just everybody copies each other. And Whittingham has what most programs and most coaches want. And that's stability. That's consistency. You know, everybody's going to want some of that.
No, and definitely on the coaching standpoint, with the security from assistant coaches, there was one assistant coach that I talked to years ago, and he said he'd do anything to be able to get under Kyle just to have that security of knowing year in and year out he's got a job. So I get that. Maybe I'm being a little oversensitive about it, but I just thought it was a little weird. All right, turning the attention over the defense in this game. Scott, you mentioned the defense was just lights out. Holding former Cougar Jacob, I have a bad comb over. 5 of 22.
A bad comb over.
His comb over is probably better than his passing in the game. 5 of 22. I mean, it was so bad. They had their running back in there playing quarterback.
He was awful.
Yeah, I mean, and the running back, I mean, it looked like we were out like doing a pickup game playing flag football. And Conover wasn't any better. I mean, it was clear ASU had no confidence in him whatsoever, which is saying something considering he was lucky enough to be under the tutelage of A-Rod, the AKA the QB whisperer, for a number of years. Just to see him, you know, be that bad of a quarterback under that tutelage was something to behold, baby.
My favorite was the roll out to the right and throw across your body off your back foot.
for the battle interception.
Yes.
So I sat behind the ASU bench for this game, and literally nobody on the ASU team would talk to Conover. Like, he would just wander back and forth. Nobody would come up to him. Nobody would put their arm around him. Nope.
Wait, like the whole game or just after that pick?
No, the whole game. The whole game. And I mean, it was because early on he had the headset on, because he was obviously not playing. But shortly after, was it Burgett goes down, he gets thrown in there. He takes off the headset. And every time they'd come off the field, everybody's huddled together, and he's just there. he'd like try and get in on a conversation, and then the two guys would just walk away and he'd just be left standing there. It was kind of interesting. I was like, I don't think anybody on this team likes this guy.
Well, when you go 5 of 22, I don't think too many people are going to be talking to you.
No.
Did they ever say what the injury was on the starting quarterback? Was it a knee or ankle?
I did not hear or see anything on that.
Okay, the other thing on that, another uproar, and I get it. I shouldn't let fans on Twitter get under my skin, but the fact that ASU fans were trying to claim that that was a dirty hit, that Utah was trying to injure Borgay.
Oh, seriously? I didn't see any of that. They really said that?
Borgay, whatever his name is. Yeah. And I was like, it was just
Cam, a football
tackle in the backfield.
I'm a little offended you called him Borgay.
What is it? Is it Borgay, Borgay?
Well, I don't know. Is the T silent?
Okay, it's saying he is day to day. If ASU played today, he would not play.
There's no way that's a dirty hit.
I mean, I only saw the replay once. It didn't look dirty to me, but it wasn't my quarterback either, so.
I think it was just unlucky that the way he went down and just tweaked something. I don't think there was any malicious intent to it.
No. No. The other big stat of the day that I absolutely love and would love if Utah can do this against Washington, holding Arizona 1 of 16 on third down.
I'll tell you, man, the defense came out with something to prove. They played lights out. That's the type of Utah defense, man, where they're just flying to the ball. They're playing with attitude. And we typically see that, you know, for whatever reason, it was not there against Oregon. But I mean, let's be honest, this is going to be a completely different test with Penix and the wide receivers that UW has. And they've got a good running game too, so they're very good offensively. It's going to be a tough task, but the defense, that's a good omen going into this game.
Oh yeah, way to shake off kind of that disappointing play against Oregon. Kind of mentioned this last week on the podcast that I think it was nice to kind of get ASU in right now before they go to Oregon, able to kind of work out their issues, both offensively and especially defensively, because that Oregon game was just horrendous. Another big thing, key takeaway, we saw a true freshman get quite a bit of run on defense, and Kyle was singing his praises. Snowden got a lot of reps at DB.
Yeah, he looked good out there.
Yeah, he's bigger than I thought. I kind of thought he was just kind of this little dude, but he's got some bulk to him.
One interesting kind of tidbit out of the presser with Winningham is he said that next season they'll look to move Teo Johnson to outside corner or even free safety, which will allow Smith Snowden more time on the field. I mean, it's cool. It's great because here's a guy that was very highly rated, highly recruited. And after his first game playing defensive snaps, Kyle is just singing his praises and already talking about, you know, moving Johnson to get him to be able to get Snowden on the field more. And I think that even speaks volume because, I mean, Teo Johnson's a great athlete, and that's, I mean, for him to get moved for Smith Snowden, I think it just says a lot about him.
You know, get your best playmakers on the field. I mean, I think that also tells you that Bishop will not be back next year, which I think we all kind of figured anyways. But, man, that's the beautiful thing about Utah's too deep right now. There's not a lot of upperclassmen, a lot of youth. I mean, outside of Miles Battle, you're Broughton, I believe, you're bringing pretty much everybody back on that defense. So, young and good and a lot of depth behind it, which we've seen this year with injuries, right? And so And I think, you know, Kyle mentioned they're not going to recruit a big class this year because they want to leave a number of spots for transfers through the portal. And I think Utah's going to continue to be aggressive through the portal, whether that's at the linebacker position and to kind of meet some of these needs. And but man, we're in a great spot.
Speaking of defensive players, I noticed that one of the backup linebackers who we've talked about on this podcast before is seeing a little action on the offensive side of the ball at fullback, Mr. Hayden Fury.
That was interesting to see. I think unfortunately for Hayden, kind of had the one downer from the defense with that late hit, which gave ASU a first down late in the game. Morgan pulled him after that, and then basically undressed him on the sideline. He was so upset with that play. And I don't think Fury came back in after that. But yeah, you know, hey, let's go. Let's get a linebacker and a fullback. Let's bust some heads, baby.
The defense essentially pitched a shutout because that lone field goal they got came off of a bad special teams play.
The special teams. All right. We've seen a lot of praises on the offense, even more on the defense. Special teams was terrible. Just flat out terrible. Yes, Ryan, that return, they were able to get a field goal out of it. Utah missed a field goal in that game. And then they had a punt return that only got called back on a holding call, and the hold really wasn't even part of the play. Like, the guy that got held wasn't even near the runner. Utah got lucky on that. But yeah, special teams, the big downer in this game.
Woof, woof, special teams. We just can't have a full year of just consistently good special teams, can we?
Nope, we can't. It's been better than last year or last couple of years, but yeah, it still has not been consistent for sure.
All right, so that kind of do our thoughts of the Utah-Arizona State game. The biggest question I have after this game is how much of it was Utah and how much was it of Arizona State just playing poor? And was it a combination of both? I don't know. I think we'll know maybe a little bit more this coming week as Utah takes on Washington. We're going to sit down with BT from the Dog Pod, kind of get his perspective on this Washington Husky team, kind of get his insight of it. We're up against a break, so when we come back, we'll sit down and talk with BT.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, Utah fans, super stoked for this sit down with BT from the Dog Pod. We've had BT on a couple times. Their show has come out to Salt Lake. Had a great show at Gracie's. I remember a couple years ago we went and hung out there with you guys. But welcome back. It's been a few years since Utah and Washington have played. So it's always great to have you on. Appreciate you coming on.
Love being back. And unfortunately, the last year, as you know, Pac-12 rivals or as Pac-12 anything. I mean, I definitely have my Big 12 cheering interest for you guys moving forward, but this is going to be the last one. So we got to go out big.
I know. It's kind of bittersweet, but definitely, and we'll get into the Big Ten because I want to get your thoughts on that. We'll hit on that. But to kind of start off with Washington, you know, they're getting a lot of attention and praise, rightfully so, for their throw game. And Penix Jr., amazing quarterback, lighting it up. I think one part of the offense maybe that isn't getting a lot of, at least, attention outside of Seattle is the running game. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of talk to us and Utah fans about Washington's running game and kind of who was that lead running back for them?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. And this is one in which I was really worried about it when we had the season ending injury to Cam Davis, who was really our go-to, last year, we thought was going to be our go-to this year coming in and he's out for the year. And we didn't really know, too much, about Dylan Johnson, the transfer from Mississippi State. And we had some other guys that we still looked at, Will Nixon, Tybo Rogers, who've gotten a little bit of time, but DJ Dylan Johnson, he's really taken, the mantle, and it's been pretty incredible what he's done so far. If you look at even the last couple of games, even obviously in SC, I mean, shoot, he had more rushing yards than Penix had passing and USC. And, USC's defense is susceptible, but he had 199 yards before contact. So, you might think how much of that is defensive scheme by SC where their defensive coordinator gets fired and how much of that is really offensive line coming together. But, he's been quite good. And the offensive line, I think we lost some key pieces last year. And the issue with it, I think, when they're all healthy, I like that starting group. I like Brailsford at center. I really like the left side with Fauton and Kaleppo. On the other side, Buello's been great. Roger Rosengartner, I think he's been fine. When they go down is when you see things really fall apart. And that's kind of what you saw against ASU, where we couldn't run the ball. Stanford, where we've had problems. Where the Hatchett brothers, who are a bit younger, you have a true freshman who's coming in and playing, and it really falls apart. And then the running game really suffers. So it really is contingent upon, I think, two things. Is one, that starting five on the offensive line being healthy. And then the second thing, obviously, is the passing game, continually to take pressure and pull some of that secondary and the linebackers back a little bit. And then Dylan can go to work. But, what he did against SC, he had a 100-yard game against Oregon. That was great. But the game against SC was his real breakout game.
Looking at Penix, I'm getting a lot of national recognition. Mm-hmm. He is on a lot of people's Heisman list, and mm-hmm. rightfully so. The kid's balling out. Is it the success he's having? Is it mostly him? Is it the system? Is it the talent around him? Is it kind of a combination? Kind of break down where you feel how he's exceeding.
It's a good question. I don't think he's getting the the NFL scouting love that he deserves. And I think, he right now they're predicting him as is he a second rounder? Is he later? What is he? And that kind of stuff changes as you get closer to NFL draft, but I do think he's a proven winner. He's got an incredible talent. I mean, look at how quick the ball comes off of his left arm. It's really incredible. Particularly, he had the flu during the ASU game. The Stanford game wasn't feeling well, and I think those were his sort of harder games. But when it's coming together, I mean, he does have weapons with Roma Dunze, JP, Jalen Polk. Losing McMillan has really hurt, in my opinion. And there were the first couple of games, particularly in the Michigan State game, until he got hurt, where there was people questioning whether was Jalen McMillan your one or was Roma Dunze your one, who was actually the better receiver. And when Jalen's gone down, and it doesn't look like he's going to play this week, and he may be out for 2-3 weeks, if they're going to try to shut him down for a little bit. You've seen others come on where Jalen Polk has been that true number two. And then after that, kind of between Giles Jackson, the Michigan transfer who just came back against Oregon, and then Jeremy Bernard, who went to Michigan State, was a home product who transferred back. And so there are a lot of weapons. And the system is the system, right? Penix would not have done this under John Donovan. I can't even say those two together, but he would not have been able to do this under that system. So part of it is this Ryan Grubb where, I think we've got him for a year. I think this is the year. I think he's gone next year. I don't think he, turns down an Alabama OC job or a head coaching job again. I think he came back for kind of one special year within this system. But I think Penix is a real, for us, we're not talking about him, at least as Husky fans, of you can't have a conversation about the greatest Husky quarterback and not put him in there at this point. You know,
from an outsider's perspective, I mean, he's phenomenal. And his starting career was Indiana, right?
Yeah.
I mean, his freshman year kind of came on the scene in Indiana. But just from an outsider's perspective, like his growth over his college career, I think has just been phenomenal. Super jealous of the quarterback play at Washington. I think with Cam Rising being gone season for Utah, we would give anything to have even half of what you're getting up there. Looking at this Washington roster, seeing some injuries today. Mm-hmm. I think starting safety might be out. You mentioned wide receiver. Kind of what's the health with the Huskies right
now? It is tough, I think. So you've got a few that have just come back and had limited reps. So we already talked about Jalen McMillan. He's out for this week, and he's getting a second opinion on his knee from the Seahawks training staff. And I think it's going to be a question. Is it a week or is it three or is he done? And that really hurts because he was definitely, in my opinion, your number two weapon. And there were times in those first couple of games when he really did look like he was more of a threat than even Rome was. So that, like, missing him, it really, really hurts. We've had Mateo Mele on the offensive line. It's been out for the entire year. So, you know, he was someone that I think we were really going to look at. But again, he's been out the whole year. So no real change there. The secondary is where things go a little sideways. So I guess I could say Tuli Gasanoa, who, you know, is our big defensive line and probably, I would say, our best interior defender. I think he played, I want to say, 8 snaps at USC. And so he's back. But, you know, are they limiting him and trying to bring him back full time against Utah? I don't know. But if he doesn't play a healthy dose, it worries me because between him and MJ Ale, Jacob Andis, Fatui Tuitele, Tuli is the best by far. You know, he's the senior there, and he was out for a few games and again played 8 snaps against SC. So that one I think has been tough. And in the secondary is where it just gets gets so dicey because you know Asa Turner. He's already been ruled out for this week. He started with a hand injury and he's playing with a club, which as your safety, when you're playing with a club, it limits things, but he's such a sure front tackle. They let him in and they had a shoulder injury and then he was in a boot. So, you know, we're not going to have him for this week. And I don't know if we get him back. Cameron Fibigalon, people call Cam Fab. He played, I think it was 6 snaps this week against SC, you know, and he was out 2 weeks prior, but you saw it was real dicey with, and then Vincent Nunley was non-injury related, allowed to rejoin the team. I don't even know if they're using those words, but he's back. And again, played 6 or 8 snaps against SC. So last week you saw corners being pulled back and playing this kind of 3 corner look where you didn't even really have a deep safety on the field because we didn't have anyone to start. We're down to Mikel Esteem, and you know, God bless him. Mikel Esteem's a sophomore. And you know, he's a fourth string, right? He's our fourth string safety. And that was the best safety we could put on the field 2 weeks ago. So it is a little bit of trouble back there. I think if they're really unleashing Vincent Nunley and Cam Fab is back to 100%, we'll probably be okay without Asa Turner, but he's still, that's your number one safety. Asa was the captain of the defense, you know, he's a captain on the team, but he's also out, you know, he's out calling, he's out captaining from the backfield and calling coverage schemes, and not having him out there really, really hurts as a real senior. So that one's tough, and it just kind of depends on, you know, I don't know if it's going to be some mix of Cam Fab and Vincent Nunley, if they're going to let him back, but that is probably one of the biggest injuries that we've got. It's a little scary. I mean, you can see obviously like how many yards SC put up against us, the struggles that we had against Stanford, the struggles that we had against ASU. So,
and that, I think that kind of leads me to my next question, because looking at Washington's defense, you know, there have been quite a few games where they've had allowed, you know, a lot of points, especially to teams like maybe Cal and Stanford, and even Arizona, even though Arizona has been playing at much better than I think a lot of people anticipated, especially with the quarterback change there. And so is that because of the injuries that you're speaking of? Is the defense kind of allowed these points and these yards because of the injuries, or are there other issues?
It's a good question, Kim. I think there's some games like Cal where it doesn't bother me at all. Cause when you look at who Cal put yards and points up against, there's names that I had to like look through and see. I was like, oh, shoot, when did this catch on the team? I mean, they were so deep. And I think, you know, they're, we're just a little bit more, we were akin to like, hey, if we're up in third and the fourth and you're pulling all your offensive starters, let's put in some guys that never see the field. And that's who they put up points against in Cal. ASU and Stanford, it worried me because you got it. Our quote unquote, like starters are out there getting burned. I thought maybe Stanford tried a few things, particularly bodying up Jabbar Muhammad, who's our best lockdown corner, the transfer from Oklahoma State. And they just would put a 6'4 tight end-esque, the typical Stanford, like, quote unquote, receiver, but he says like a 6'4, 6'5 tight end and body him up, and it worked. So, I mean, there's definitely like, this is not the 2016 Husky defense. And that's why, like, my preseason prediction was I thought they would lose. They had at least a loss in them, probably one loss. I think I had them going like 11-1, but I thought they had a loss in them. And I hate to say that. I still think they might, and I hope it's not this week. I hope it's not the week after, but like, it's a flawed enough defense that this is just, it's just not, we've seen this before when we had the 2016 team and like what we called like the death row, death row D. They gave themselves that name. And that's all those guys that you see in the NFL right now. Who are playing incredible, but now we just don't have that. So, and then take on top of that the injuries, and then even against, like I said, ASU, like the half the team had this like stomach flu or something, and it just didn't look good. But so I think it's a mix of talent, particularly in the secondary side, injuries, and then this is what you got. So. It's just tough.
What's the feel of the fan base right now for the Huskies?
Undefeated, yeah.
Coming off a big win off USC, and people can say that, hey, it may be a down year for USC. I don't care if it's a down year or not. Anytime that Utah beats USC, it's big. We love it. So what's kind of the feel for the fan base, and especially for Utah fans that are traveling up to Seattle? What should Utah fans kind of expect?
It's a different, I haven't,
out of the fan.
I mean, I haven't experienced anything like this. I mean, it was a little bit in 2016, but 2016 was a little bit more of a slow boil. This year, I think coming in, people had some high expectations. And they've been surpassed to date. I thought the ASU game, typically, just as an example, like in the ASU game, when a one-win team comes into town, you can scalp tickets for $20. That's Husky Stadium, right? That's what it's always been. When our worst game, middle of the season, night game, a bunch of people have family commitments, older, whatever, they can't come in. And you couldn't find those $20 tickets. They weren't there. And ASU, everybody showed up. In our tailgate, I think that was the one, we kind of a rotating thing in our tailgate in the south lot of Husky Stadium. And I hosted that week. And normally you'd expect, 30, 40 people to show up. And I did a count and we were up to 110, 115. So everyone's showing up. No one's missing. Everyone's bringing friends and family. And that's just kind of the fervor around Husky football right now, where we recognize we've had like the Willingham years. We've had, so many of these years that this isn't like, the 90s or whatever, in which you thought, oh, every year we're going to be a Rose Bowl team. Every year we're going to be a Pac-12, a Pac-10 contender. The fan base now knows that this is something special and you got to show up for it. And so I would expect this week, 12:30 game, nationally televised, it's going to be rocking. It's going to be loud. And you guys saw this at SC when you've been to the Coliseum. Like, the Coliseum is a mecca. I could not believe how quiet it was on third down. I mean, you could just turn to the person next to you and have a conversation.
I noticed the same thing.
I couldn't believe it. It just amazes me. And, they don't have the cantilevered kind of stadium and the domes like we do that helps with noise, but either does Utah. And, in Utah it was loud on third down. You guys were loud and you don't have the numbers, and other places I've been, I hate to say Oregon as well. Like, they're loud, but it's going to be rocking on Saturday. Like, people understand there's three games left. We have two more home games. Apple Cup is sold out. Apple Cup's going to be insane. But this one is if you want to come see this game, people that I know, I'll just say this kind of anecdotally, but like, people that I have never known to have any interest in college football at all call because they know, oh yeah, I know you're into UW. Like, how do I get tickets? How do I get tickets to this thing? It's an attraction because it's kind of lightning in the bottle and you've got not only the undefeated season, but the stars, right? The stars, you bring out people as well. And that's what you've got in Penix and others, but it's been great.
No, that's great. And I know, I mean, Kyle Whittingham mentioned that in his presser today, talked about the stadium, just the unique setting it is next to the lake there. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. And then the noise. And he said they got to prep for that this week. Mm-hmm. Really got to, you know, be able to run their offense and their defense with that noise. And I think that's, you know, with the inconsistency of Utah's offense, that kind of makes me a little bit nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the Utah-Washington game, you know, we kind of mentioned at the beginning of this, the move to the Big Ten for Washington, mm-hmm. kind of the Pac-12 going away. Your thoughts, Big Ten, the fan base thoughts, Big Ten, what's the feel up there?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of me, like, it's an absolute shame that there isn't West Coast football anymore for, in a conference perspective, and that really mismanagement by, you know, the Pac-12, by all the university presidents. You know, I don't think there's one that's innocent, in my opinion. Couldn't get this thing done and made this thing work. And I think we might have missed it by a year. I think if we had this year, maybe last year, this year's playing, and then obviously, like, what let's be honest, what Dion has done with, you know, the attention that he's brought to the sport and, you know, into the Pac-12, maybe we could have saved it. But so much mismanagement that you could make a great movie about this at some point, about how this ran itself into the ground unnecessarily. And that's a travesty, because, I mean, you know, for me, like, I grew up as a, you know, Pac-10 fan, and that there was always this West Coast football, and that we had a Pac-North rivalry. And I thought we made the right move. I was always such a huge fan of bringing in Utah and Colorado, and I loved what we had in the Pac-12. And to have it just die, to me, is just ridiculous. But also, I think it's completely inevitable. And, you know, at the end, like, money rules all in college sports. We had to join. There wasn't a choice. I think if anything, you know, if you look at even us taking a smaller share to go in the Big Ten, and I look around, I'm like, how Maryland and Rutgers are going to pull more of a share, and this drives me nuts. But we did not play a very good poker hand. And when USC and UCLA went, I think a lot of fans like me were still sticking around trying to save this thing. And we went until, you know, we're going into this last hand of poker with an offsuit 2-3, and there's nothing we could do. We had to, like, there wasn't a choice. You know, we had to do this Big Ten thing, because otherwise, like, look what's going to happen to Oregon State and Wazoo. If they end up in the Mountain West, it's over. You can't pay your bills. And they have big bills coming due. So you don't really have a choice. But it, to me, it is a travesty. At the same time, you know, like, you got to move forward. You got to move on. And, like, we're going to go to Penn State next year. I'm excited about that. Like, going to Michigan, I think there's a lot of great rivalries that can start happening. And we still get some West Coast football with USC, UCLA, and, you know, and Oregon. But it is a bummer. But, you know, you can't be like the old guy, you know, screaming on your lawn for too long. You got to get out there and just, you know, move forward, right?
Yeah. Now, and I think the feel in Salt Lake is very similar. I think everyone wanted the Pac-12 just to stay around, and it makes sense. And honestly, from a fan base up here, there's not, like, finger pointing at anyone other than the presidents, mm-hmm. like what you said, kind of dropping the ball over the last couple of years, not putting the Pac-12 to be in a position to really move forward in the future. I will say there may be some jealousy, just because the Big Ten is a little bit more prestigious than the Big 12. So mm-hmm. From Utah's standpoint, I think, yes, we're happy that we have a home. We're not homeless like Oregon State or Washington State, like you said. But I think Utah, maybe a couple years down the road, if it does go to the two super conferences, I think Utah's hoping to get in the Big Ten, just like Washington there.
Mm-hmm.
Going into this game, you know, what are your thoughts? What are your keys? And do you have a winner yet in this game between Washington and Utah?
Yeah, it. I think it's going to be tough. It's hard to see, because, like, I look at what what Oregon did to you guys, and it was really surprising to me. I thought that would be a closer game, particularly in Rice Eccles, you know. But then I think, like you said last week, can kind of show what Utah can do. And I think when you guys pull, your defense is always going to be one that can give any team trouble and can give Washington trouble. And, you know, we've shown where we can get it. Like, if you're going to get into it, like, a foot race with us, like USC or whatever, fine. Like, we'll do that. We'll put up 52. But teams that can really shut us down, and you know, I think get Penix scrambling is kind of, you know, it's easier said than done if you can get the ball quickly. But if you can get him scrambling and get him off his cadence and cause him problems, particularly as ASU was doing when we had the, you know, with our second and third string centers and guards, like they went right up the middle and slashed and we were just a mess. So I think there is a formula. Like there's definitely a formula for beating us. It's just who can sort of do it. I want the secondary to come together a little bit. And I know without kind of Cam Rising and the team be together, like you don't really have the weapons that we thought you guys would have this year. But if the secondary looks like it did against ASU and Stanford and at times against SC, it's trouble. It's hard for me to see the Huskies losing this game at home. I don't know what the line is. I think it's going to be a close game, but it's hard for me to envision them losing this game. The Oregon State game scares me a lot in Corvallis. I think until 5 weeks ago, I was a little bit worried about the Apple Cup, but something's going on in Pullman that their team has just completely fallen apart at the seams. And I think turning out the coach a little bit. But this one, I think it's going to be a close game, but it's hard for me to envision a way that with the way the offense is rolling, that they're healthy coming off this SC and the way that the culture's kind of been built. I think it's going to be a close win, but one that I think UW can pull together.
Hi, BT. Thank you so much for joining us. Where can Utah fans listen to your stuff? Because I know there's fans like me that just they want to listen to Utah's opponent coming up. Where can Utah fans listen to your stuff?
Yeah, so we're Dawgpod, DAWGPOD. Gosh, this is year 12 for us now. And we'll be recording on Wednesday and, you know, going through the Utah game and then reliving the SC game a little bit. Last week we had Lofa Tatupu on, who is, you know, an SC Seahawks kind of legend, talk us through the game. You know, and this week I think we're going to go through Utah in depth and give a talk a little bit about Utah history as well and our history and the rivalry, but would love to have Utah fans listen. And like I said, you guys always have. I just was treated so well by you guys, by the Utah Pig Bus crew and everyone on our trip to Salt Lake City when we were there, that, you know, it's one of those fan bases that when those Utah fans are in my section around me, they're going to get a warm welcome. You know, if they're passing by our tailgate, they're going to get a warm welcome because, you know, it was a welcome addition to the conference. And again, we were just treated so well in Salt Lake City.
Awesome. BT, hey, thanks, buddy. Have a great one.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, big thank you to BT from the Dog Pod for joining us, kind of giving us his insight of this Husky team. You guys, I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of nervous about this. Utah traveling up to Seattle, playing what, the number 5 ranked team, undefeated, kind of the inconsistency play from Utah. As a Utah fan, I'm nervous about this one, fellas.
I think you have every reason to be nervous because, I mean, it's going to take a monumental effort for Utah to go on the road and beat. I mean, UW's kind of been a stumbling block for Utah since we've been in the Pac-12. You know, we've won a couple of times up there. We've lost a number of times up there in heartbreaking fashion. And if I'm not mistaken, is this not our third or fourth straight game up there?
It's been a while since they've been in Salt Lake. I want to say, was it the game day when last time they were down here?
They did play in Salt Lake, I believe, in 2018 when they beat us, and then we ended up seeing them in the Pac-12 title game that year. That was when Barton famously said, "We'll see them in the Pac-12 title game again," and we all kind of thought, "Oh, sure, sure."
And sure enough, I stand corrected.
Sure enough, we did, but. I think this will be our third straight game up there because of COVID. We played back to back up there and haven't played them since. So that's definitely unfortunate, but they have you know, potentially the Heisman front runner. They're dynamic offensively. They're at home, and we're going up there again, without a Cam Rising. We're going up there with Bryson Barnes and a team that is just absolutely slaughtered with injuries. Do we have a chance? Absolutely. You never count out Kyle Whittingham or this Utah team, especially this Utah defense. But it's going to take an absolute incredible showing for Utah to win this game, I think, and probably even to keep it close.
When you look at the ASU game with them, I mean, ASU was creating turnovers. I think that's what really going to come down to. Utah's defense is good enough that when they show out, they're going to be able to keep Utah in this game. But I think the offense is going to need a lot of help from this defense in turnovers, and I think multiple turnovers by the defense, and maybe even, I mean, a score by the defense or special teams.
Yeah, the corners are going to get tested big time this weekend. They've got some pretty prolific wide receivers, and I mean, not only that, their running back went off against USC. Not that that's saying much. We all know how great of a defense USC has. But especially the secondary, they're going to get tested. And if they can, you know, if they can play coverage for a few seconds and let the D line get some pressure on him, they could force him into some mistakes.
ASU had great success against Penix. Did not throw a touchdown against them. He held them in check. I think what they only scored, was it 7 or 10 offensive points in that game? And they blitzed him all night long. And I think that's a game plan right there. It worked once. Does Scally try and duplicate that? Does he? Because Kyle Whittingham said today, this offensive line will be one of the best that we've seen. So can our front four consistently on their own get to Penix and make life difficult for him? I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see what game plan Scally has in store. But I think you're going to have to pressure Penix all night long and make him uncomfortable. Because otherwise, if he has all night in that pocket with those wide receivers, sorry. Good night, Utah. Everybody that's listening, go sacrifice a chicken or something on behalf of our defensive backs.
All right, let's go ahead and get our picks in for this game. So Utah's traveling to face Washington Huskies. The spread actually opened up for 10.5 for Washington. It's actually slowly moved down towards Utah as we're recording this. Washington's an 8.5-point favorite. Scott, we'll kick it over to you first. Who do you got and what's your score?
Yeah, on this one, I want to pick the Utes. It would be sweet to go up there and keep the hope alive for a third straight Pac-12 title. But man, I don't know that I see it. I think Utah is going to keep it close, but I think ultimately UW wins this, pulls away late. I got UW with the score of 35, Utah 27.
Ryan, where are you going?
I'm kind of falling in line with Scott. I do think the Utes make it a little bit competitive, but can't sustain it. Being down so many players, being on the road, being Washington, having such a good team, I think. I think the Utes go down to the Huskies 34-24.
You guys are a bunch of downers. Utah still has a chance for Vegas.
Okay. Hey, Ryan, I think this is the part of the podcast where we hold hands.
If Utah can win out and then get some help along the way, Utah can still win their third Pac-12 championship.
You're right. They can.
I think I just said that.
I don't see it happening, guys.
As much as I want to. What are you, Lee Corso over here?
As much as I believe in the pig farmer, I think going on the road to Seattle, it's a little too much to ask of this team right now. I got the Huskies 31-24. Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. Drum, the letter N, Feather.
And Scott?
Yeah, you can find me @UteMan_forever.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram @UtahManPodcast. You can catch us at our home at UtahManPodcast.com. And anywhere you listen to a podcast, we are there. And hopefully Utah gets a win over Washington we're all wrong. And Scott, I can't believe I'm going to say this. I hope you feel better. If you want to send, Scott some chicken noodle soup, we'll put out his address. You can go deliver it to him and go Utes.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I hope you feel better.
I can feel the love, Cam. I can feel it.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, chicken noodle soup, back massage,
in a meadow.
Any of those will do, guys. Well, not from guys, but you know what I mean.
All right, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes will be tell I die kai, which could be denied. Go Utes.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.